This is an ABC podcast.
For copyright reasons, the music has been edited. To hear the full tracks, listen to The J-Files, Thursday nights on Double J, or head to doublej.net.au and click on the track list at the bottom of each episode.
Kaz Strand here. Welcome to The J-Files, the podcast for people who love music. Each episode is like a quick music history lesson. We pick a different artist or band, we look at some of the most important moments in their career, and we celebrate their impact on music, all in less than 30 minutes. On this episode, it's West Australian band Little Birdie. Yeah. Formed in the early 2000s, Little Birdie quickly found fame with their classic pop songs, Big Emotions, and the incredible voice of Katie Steele. And I'm stoked to have Katie Steele herself joining us for a look back on her band's wonderful career, which gave us three great albums. We'll zoom in on the critical moments in the Little Birdie story as Katie shares the important turning points in the band's career and why she opted to up stumps and start over by herself in New York. Before we hear from Katie, though, I wanted to go back to a couple of great chats from the archives. Here's Katie and guitarist and keyboardist Simon Leach talking to Mel Bampton on Triple J in 2004 about what they were doing before they formed Little Birdie.
I was in an electronic duo called The Plastic Scene, and it's kind of like Portishead-y, kind of mellow, kind of synthesized 80s kind of thing. So
what happened?
Decided I want to play guitar in a band and rock out.
So you'd already obviously played guitar for a long time though as well.
No, I've only played since this band's been together.
You're kidding. Yeah. Oh, you show off.
I'm such a show off now. Believe me, when I'm on stage, I love the axe. But like when me and Simon had our first jam, like I couldn't even stand up and play. Like I couldn't even sit down and play. I was that bad. So but I had all these songs written, so I was like, got to get these songs out there. So
Simon, did you have to carry Katie for a while there with the guitar you had to teach her?
Always. Still am.
Shut up.
So what about you musically? What were you up to, Simon, before Little Birdie?
I was doing a swampy rocking kind of outfit called One Horse Town. Just they're still going in Perth because it's my brother and my girlfriend. So, yeah, it's that's what I was doing just for fun, you know. And then started doing this one for fun and it ended up being a job, being the best job.
So is that how it started, that you guys already knew each other and you just were jamming and then it just became more concrete?
I don't really know Simon. I just kind of seen him around playing and kind of went, and he's got a cool style that could go good. I might snap him.
So you headhunted him?
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. I'd seen him around. He's, you know, he's a good looking guy. Plays guitar pretty well. Had a cool car.
the important things. Full head of hair.
Yeah, and then the rest of it was kind of just fate, like history. Like Barney, our bass player, saw us playing a gig together, and then we were looking for a drummer, and Maddie rocked up, and just all kind of fit like a little puzzle.
Just
nicely.
Fell into our laps, really. Yeah, like, it was so weird.
Well, I mean, so you're still sort of looking back over the last 12 months going, my God, this is a pretty strange journey we've been on.
Yeah.
But when you think 12 months, it feels to us like 3-4 years because, you know, we haven't really been back home much. We're just, you know, running amok, doing tours and, you know.
Having a good time.
It's full time.
Well, what about Fergus? He's the latest addition to the band, isn't he?
Yeah, Fergus Deasy's joining the
He's a specialist, mate. Specialist handyman.
So why did you decide to bring in a specialist handyman to Little Birdie?
Because we're all crap.
Because he's going to be sharing vocal duties as well.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And we can try and replicate some of the Brian Wilson try-hard stuff on the album.
And what about the keys? So was it a big decision to go, we want someone on keys full-time?
Yeah, well, just because there's heaps of keys on the album.
Needed someone to play it when you were cruising around.
We knew we needed to. As soon as we started the album, we knew we needed someone to help on tour and stuff. So, yeah, Fergus was the man.
Little Birdie's debut album, Big Big Love, is full of some of their most loved songs. Here's Katie Steele and drummer Matt Checker talking to Robbie Buck on Triple J in 2004 about how they approached making the album.
Well, we knew where we wanted to get inspiration from for different songs and all that kind of stuff, what we wanted to sound like in the end, but I don't think there was never, we never actually wanted to say this is how well we want to do, and like these people are, record company people are like banking on this to be a good album or whatever. Mm. We never really thought about that at all. Well, I know I didn't. I don't think anyone else did.
We didn't really think about it like that at all. Like, it was more about, you know, this has been, I suppose the main pressure was from the fact that it had been building up, like, and the whole question was putting songs on from the EPs or not, and we really didn't want to do that. Obviously, we put two songs on there. We could have just joined the EPs together and had an album, but who's going to do that, you know? Like, it's kind of, it's about keeping it fresh, and there's just so many songs that we haven't even started yet, like, we just the most exciting thing is doing the next album, you know? Like, I want to start it now, but it's just, yeah, I think the best thing, though, is with the record company is just that lack of that pressure. Like, they let us do our thing and we do it and we don't think about it too much. We do it if we enjoy it. And I think that's what the album's about, really, is just we didn't sit there and say we want a pop album, we want this. We just did it and it's worked out fine.
Katie Steele grew up in a very musical family. Her dad, Rick, is a blues musician, and her brother, Luke, formed the Sleepy Jackson in the late 90s and later Empire of the Sun. So Katie was surrounded by musically talented family members growing up. I invited Katie onto the J-Files to share some of the big turning points in her career. One of those moments came when she started to write her very first songs, some of which would go on to become Little Birdie's most well-known.
I was still living at home, and what I remember is I had like the smallest bedroom. I mean, I had my own bedroom, which, you know, a lot of people don't even have their own bedroom, but had my own bedroom and it was tiny. And because I was obsessed with clothes and still am, there was just clothes everywhere. And I had this keyboard like in the middle of the room, just some terrible keyboard with a really bad sound, but I didn't know how to play really at all. And this was around the time that Luke had just got Sleepy Jackson happening, so he was playing around town, and it was really cool because I'd always kind of just tag along with him, and I was just always like the younger sister, and I was getting in like underage to all the bars and like watching him play and hanging out with all his friends. And yeah, I had just a really cool introduction to like the scene. And yeah, I just remember tinkering away and kind of meeting my first crush, I guess, who then became my boyfriend. But when I first met him, he just didn't notice me at all. And the song was kind of about that, just about me kind of, you know, really falling for this person that just thought I was invisible. And it was written like, you know, I don't remember writing it. All the best songs that I've ever written, I don't remember writing because they just kind of happen. And yeah, I just remember thinking I didn't even really think I was a songwriter, and it was just kind of me just, you know, just tinkering away. Mm. And, you know, Beautiful and Baby Blue and all those songs were all written around the same time. Like, they're literally the first time I even learned how to play guitar, these ones, songs were written. So there was, you know, it was obviously the really simple ones that kind of cut through and kind of stood the test of time, I guess.
And obviously tap into some a really pure, you know, but adolescent, you know, purity of emotion, you know, and honouring those things, not sort of, you know, shying away from them necessarily.
Yeah, it was really funny because when I was younger, like maybe like 14 or 15, I remember being into singing, but my mum was like, oh, we can go and do some singing lessons if you want. And I went and saw this jazz singer for, I think I did like 3 or 4 lessons. And she was like, you know what? I don't think you need this. Like, I don't want to change your tone. You know, she's like, I don't want to change what you're doing is really cool. But I was really shy back then. Like, I didn't really, it was hard to just sing in front of her. But got to the age of like 18, 19, and I just kind of was like, oh man, just got to do this. And just this kind of wave of confidence came over me. And then I just kind of, found my voice, and I wasn't really shy about singing about such vulnerable emotions. Like, I don't know, it just wasn't a big deal. It was like, yeah, just kind of felt natural, so just kind of went with it.
The next big turning point for Katie was taking these songs out of her bedroom and performing them in front of other people. One of the first times she did this was at her brother Luke's 21st birthday party. Among the guests were members of other Perth bands like Eskimo Joe and Jebediah. Katie says many of them were impressed by her singing and super encouraging, which gave her a huge boost.
It was a real turning point, I guess, for my confidence. And that's when, Simon, I think, might have been there. And again, he'd been in the industry for like 15 years or something when he met me. Like, he was in his 30s and I was like 18. And this is the thing with the band. Like, I was like the young, super young, and the three other guys were, a bit older, which had its advantages in a lot of ways. And then we basically formed the band like super, super fast. Like, all of this happened within like 2-3 months, and basically got in the studio and recorded the first EP, which was which had Relapse and Beautiful, and I think a song called Too Late and a song called Andy Warhol. I Should Have Known With You. I can't remember what we ended up calling it.
Yeah, I Should Have Known. I think that was its title originally.
Yeah, we used to call it Andy Warhol for some reason. I always had a habit of calling songs what I was influenced by. So we had a song called AC Newman. We had a song called Strokes. We had a song called Andy Warhol. Yeah, it was always that was my little way of naming the songs.
All
just
right.
What I was trying to rip off.
And you talked about going on your way to the burger joint, you know, your job, when you got the phone call. Who was that from?
Yeah, so this EP got kind of sent out. Maddie, the drummer at the time, was kind of in charge of, you know, it kind of took on a semi-management role and was like, look, I think we should send it out, and, you know, my ideal manager would be this guy, and I think we should aim to be independent. He kind of had quite a cool plan on what we should kind of aim for. And, that manager was Phil Stevens, who managed John Butler. And basically he called me while I was working at Johnny Rockets at the Galleria, which, if you're from Perth, you will know where that is. and it was like a American diner burger place. And basically I was like the only person working during the day, and I ran to the freezer. So I left the whole shop open. I ran to the freezer to take the call, and it was Phil saying, oh, do you want to have a meeting? I really like these songs. And the next day I got a call from a record label saying, oh, we want to sign you. And then the next day it was a call saying, Triple J, I think, want to start playing this. And then, you know, the next day, and it was just like, whoa, what is going on here? And I think commercial radio started playing, Nova started playing Baby Blue. So we had like two songs kind of just like out there at
That's
the same
amazing,
time.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm standing there in the, you know, 18 years old, just kind of like, what is going on?
You know, your greasy apron on.
Yeah. Smelling like burgers.
After the success of Little Birdie's first album, Big Big Love, they made a bold decision to head to the US to record their follow-up. Hollywood was recorded in LA with American producer John King and saw the band incorporate electronica and heavier rock sounds.
I guess we felt a lot of pressure. You know, we're at a certain level now, and you know, the dust had kind of settled and I was like, okay, like, what are we going to do next? And like, we just kind of wanted to experiment, and we were really into, you know, Simon was really into like those synths. I think it was SH-101 was like one of the main ones we had, and can't remember the other ones, but yeah, we're just really into that kind of sound, that kind of, I guess it was like a rock synth, you know, it was like quite kind of a heavy kind of feel to it, I guess, and everything was quite punchy and quite rockin', and yeah, I don't know, we just kind of wanted to go down that path, and we thought it was really cool, we thought it was, and it was cool, but I just feel like there was, yeah, definitely kind of purists that were like, this sucks. And, yeah, it's just that funny thing where you just can't please everybody, and it's funny, you just feel like everyone's going to be, like, on your level and kind of see where you're coming from and vibe it, but that doesn't happen. And, yeah, you have people that just don't dig it. And so, yeah, that was like, interesting, I guess, going through that. You know, the record still did well. Like, Come On, Come On was a big song, and we had Bodies and a few other songs on there. But, yeah, I guess it was just another kind of big turning point. We spent, oh, man, we must have been in LA for maybe 2 months, maybe longer. So we were kind of living over there, and we were going to the studio every day, which was, at, you know, in the Hollywood Hills, and, you know, the full American experience.
What was the experience? Like, what did the band or you learn with this particular chapter of the band's life?
I think what we realized was that we had demoed everything like pretty precisely. Basically what you hear on Hollywood is exactly how all the demos sounded, except they just sounded kind of different and more polished and possibly more sped up and things. So we basically just recreated the whole thing in a different studio and in LA. Mm. And I think what we realized after that was that we don't actually need a big producer, and that kind of led us to doing the next record, producing it ourselves. And that led to Confetti being made. And I think that was a huge turning point. Like, it's always early in your career that people always tell you that, you know, you always need someone else to do everything for you. And it's always the labels that are like, you've got to go in with this producer and you've got to go in. And to be fair, the demos didn't sound that good, but we could have done it in Australia with like a cool engineer and kind of just, you know, kind of did what we had made and just kind of made it, you know, mixed it really well or whatever. And that's what I do now. I do everything at home now in a home studio. And yeah, that's kind of how the industry has evolved. And it's really got its perks. It is hard to finish things, to get them across the line, because you kind of have so many ways you can do something these days. That's the hardest thing.
And just ahead of making Confetti, if I'm not wrong, you were asked to go on tour with Paul Kelly, which is your next turning point.
Yeah, this was like huge, because and it wasn't a massive tour. It was only like 4 shows or something. But it was obviously for me, I'd always been such a fan, and we'd done a few TV things together, like duets and stuff. And, you know, we always had kind of that cool kind of relationship. But when this happened, it was, I don't know, it was just like such an honour, because it was because I was the main support, and because they were like theatre shows, you were playing to like, you know, at least, you know, 2,000 people a night. And I'd never kind of played solo before. Like, I'd played like maybe once or twice, but not just me and the guitar and just, you know, me and the piano. Like, that was such an kind of overwhelming thought. I mean, I do it now all the time. I love playing like that now. But back then, so basically I was like, okay, this is a big deal. I've got to write a bunch of songs, man, that are going to sound good just on the guitar, just on the piano, like no bells and whistles, like let's go. And yeah, basically wrote like, you know, Brother, Summarize, like pretty much all of Confetti was written like just before that tour. And then, yeah, kind of played them all on that tour and had a bunch of other ones as well that never made the record. But yeah, that was kind of the impetus to kind of get those songs, you know, songs written and in that vein of like a Motown kind of soul, you know, Aretha meets Dusty Springfield, that kind of feel. And yeah, they were like the blueprint for what became Confetti. And then it was so amazing doing that record, because we had like, yeah, I think we had maybe a good month of time locked out at Sing Sing Studios in Melbourne. And yeah, we got Steve Schramm, who at the time was kind of, he'd done a lot of stuff with you guys, with Triple J, but he hadn't done a lot of records, I don't think. And so that, again, was Maddie Checker's idea to kind of get him on board, and he kind of engineered the whole thing and just nailed it. And I found out about a month ago that apparently he vomited before our session because he was so nervous about it. He hit me up on Instagram and told me that story. I didn't know that. I didn't even know he was nervous.
Wow.
At all about working with us, but it turned out to be, you know, a big record for him, yeah, and a big record for us. And he said that most of the people that work with him now like talk about that record. So that was quite a huge thing to hear from him. That was cool.
Amazing. Yeah, it is a great record for sure. And Paul Kelly, you know, does some BBs for you on the first track.
Yeah. Yep. Brother.
That's huge, which, as well.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
That again, I think, was Maddie's idea. He was like, why don't you ask Pika? And I was like, well, I don't know, man. He's like, just do it. And I did, and he said yes, and yeah. So who's gonna love you now, baby? Who's gonna love you now, baby? When you go fighting that war, I see. Get on
Not long after their third album, Confetti, came out, though, the band announced they'd be going on a break, mainly so Katie could fulfil her long-held dream of living in New York and working on a solo album. The move overseas was another big turning point for Katie, who says it took a few years to find a place outside of the band.
You know, I made so much music over there. I made about three albums. Like, I worked first with Joel Hamilton, who worked with Sparkle Horse, and who is like one of my favorite bands, and he's worked with some Tom Waits. He's worked with some crazy artists. So we made a whole record, self-funded, and yeah, just kind of like wasn't really happy with how that kind of turned out. And then I started working with someone else. I can't even remember now. And then I started working again with another producer and kind of crafted this whole other kind of sound, which sounded quite pop and was more in like a Sia kind of sphere. But I just couldn't kind of, I just couldn't decide on what I wanted to go out with. So I just kind of shelved it all. And
so
then I ended
up three whole albums still waiting around.
Yeah. I've got a ridiculous amount of music.
Incredible.
And then I just keep writing more, so it's yeah, it's overwhelming, really overwhelming.
So you're going through a lot, and you know you've talked about it, you know, various press outlets. You know, it was a very challenging time emotionally for you. You were also teaching yourself a bunch of, you know, equipment and producing as well. Yeah, as well as networking, trying to meet people and finding, well, these producers that you've had to work with as well, all on your own steam.
Yeah, all on my own budget as well. Just kind of, you know, spending the savings and just, yeah, it was a lot. And, you know, I got a lot a lot out of it, but by the end of it, I was just kind of going around in circles, and I just decided to come back and have a bit of a breather. And yeah, not long after that, I met my partner once I got back, and then obviously everything just completely changed when I met my partner. So
wow. So they're from Western Australia?
No, he's from Scotland.
Oh, okay.
He was living in Perth.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just funny how life kind of, you know, you just go through your twists and turns. And
you do.
Yeah, I mean, I made some amazing friends over there and made some cool music and stuff. But, you know, that yeah, it was just, yeah, just a lot of different kind of elements that kind of led to me, you know, kind of going around in circles in my own kind of creative way. And you've got to kind of have that final kind of game plan. And I think I didn't kind of have that, and it just kind of, you know, kept kind of snowballing.
It might have taken a few years to find her own distinct sound, but Katie Steele's solo work has been keeping her energised and creative ever since. Before we wrapped up our chat, I couldn't help but ask, would Little Birdie ever get back together?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be keen to do a reunion tour. I think it would be really cool. I just would want it to be quite special. I wouldn't want it to be down at the local RSL. so, yeah, I'm keen. So you get your people to chat to my people. And we'll get the theatres lined up.
Okay, but as far as recording, your focus is off on other yeah, horizons at the moment by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty flat out with my own stuff. I would always be open. It's not like I wouldn't have enough songs to throw at something like that.
Yes.
So I'm open for anything, really. Like, it's, you know, if there's enough people out there that want to hear it, then I think they should start rallying around and we should get it happening.
Exciting words from Katie Steele, saying she's always open to getting a Little Birdie tour happening somewhere in the future. It's just up to us to make enough noise about it. The J Files is a Double J podcast. Make sure you like, follow and share. Our producer is Gab Burke. Theme music is by Art Versus Science. You can check out Double J anytime on the Triple J app or at doublej.net.au. I'm Kaz Tran. Thanks for listening.